It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. There's more to plastic surgery than facelifts and tummy tucks. The University of Pittsburgh Medical School is a leader in the field of plastic surgery. Joining us to address how this medical specialization blends art, science, and innovation is Dr. Peter Rubin, UPMC endowed professor and chair of plastic surgery at the University of Pittsburgh Medical School. Peter Rubin, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Oh, thank you. Very pleased to be here.
If you'd like to join the conversation, if you have a question about plastic surgery or how the Pitt Medical School has become one of the leaders in this field, 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Again, 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH@WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, the number 412-246-2002. Dr. Rubin, when people hear about plastic surgery, what readily springs to mind is bad celebrity facelifts. Are there myths about plastic surgery that you have to dispel on a regular basis? For example, there's this idea out there that, depending on where you live, say if you're in LA, for example, there are three or four doctors that everybody goes to. And so you have several groups of people in LA who end up looking like each other. And that may be a myth. An urban legend, if you will. So what are some of the myths? What are the things that you feel need to be dispelled?
Well, first of all, the first myth about plastic surgery that should be dispelled is that it is all about cosmetic surgery. And cosmetic surgery is really one part of what we do in plastic surgery, but it's an incredibly broad-reaching field that helps many patients with many different disorders. So, for example, plastic surgeons perform breast reconstruction after cancer therapy, head and neck reconstruction after cancer therapy. We take care of facial trauma, hand trauma, birth anomalies such as cleft lips, burns, tumors, and perform reconstruction all over the body as part of multidisciplinary teams. And regarding the bad celebrity facelifts, we all see that in the media. And the media tends to sensationalize plastic surgery, and especially some of the results that are really obvious. Most plastic surgeons who are performing cosmetic surgery in their practice are going to favor a more natural look that helps our patients look more rejuvenated and more rested. What we see in the media and some of these celebrities really represents often a caricature.
And a lot of times the cosmetic surgery is done by people who are aging and are trying to retain some sort of some semblance of their youth. But, and I don't know how it is now, but in fairly recent years, there's been a preponderance of young people deciding, I don't like my nose, I don't like this about my face, and electing to have plastic surgery for those reasons. Has there been in recent years too much of that, in your opinion?
Well, I don't think there's been too much of it. I think what we're seeing in the younger patient populations is a trend toward using some of the minimally invasive therapies that we have, such as filler injections to add more volume to the lips or to the cheeks, Botox injections to stave off some of the early signs of aging. Most certainly there are patients who are going to come to see plastic surgeons who have parts of their body that they don't like, where they'd like to make changes, issues with their nose, for example. And plastic surgeons are going to discuss those issues with the patients and see if it's reasonable to offer surgical solutions for that in well-selected
patients. So in other words,
patients.
Say you have a perfectly fine nose, why would you want to have the surgery?
Absolutely. And that's part of the job of a plastic surgeon is to advise a patient when surgery would be a good idea, when it would be recommended, and when it's not a good idea.
How far back does plastic surgery go? When did doctors start doing it?
Oh, it goes back into ancient times.
Really?
It really does. When techniques were developed to take care of traumatic injuries to the nose. And in fact, over 1,000 years ago, There were techniques described in India using tissue flaps to restore severed noses. And even in the 1500s, there were some very pivotal descriptions of procedures, reconstructive procedures, that we now still employ in plastic surgery.
I imagine it was much more difficult to undergo in those early days.
Well, certainly without anesthesia and without good instruments. And, modern plastic surgery really was propelled around the time of World War I, born out of the necessity of the burns and injury patterns of our troops who were injured on the battlefield. And a lot of very innovative reconstructive techniques evolved at that time.
There's a great story about a British actor by the name of Leslie Banks. And if you're an actor on stage, you're making your living, you know, in large part with your face. And he, like many other young Englishmen, went off to fight in World War I, and some sort of ordnance exploded in his face. And they were able to basically half of his face, there was a big problem, and they were able to help reconstruct it to the point where he was able to get back on stage and star in things like Hitchcock movies, The Man Who Knew mm-hmm. Too Much, and things like that. And that's where I thought maybe it began, but obviously the roots go farther back than that. But clearly, as this has evolved, there are more and more things that plastic surgeons are able to do.
Absolutely. It's a very dynamic and innovative field. And with each decade, we see new advances and new changes with our understanding of anatomy. We're able to develop new techniques. Importantly, we're now embracing a lot of the regenerative medicine therapies. And a lot of these therapies are moving forward through plastic surgery, especially to help our wounded warriors.
And what spurred your interest in this particular medical specialization?
I was really attracted to the creativity, the innovation in the field, and the wonderful blending of artistry with science, and our ability through an understanding of anatomy and physiology to innovate new techniques to solve very difficult reconstructive problems.
What happens when somebody says, "Oh, I don't like what you've done. This is not what we talked about," or, you know, your vision or a surgeon's vision of some sort of surgery that someone requests is not what they envisioned?
You know, that's a great question. And one of the key roles of a plastic surgeon is to understand the priorities and goals of our patients and have very frank discussions about expectations, about what we can provide with different surgical procedures. Set those expectations before the surgery. Despite that, every now and again, expectations may be unmet. And at that time, after surgical procedures, we work with the patients to make any necessary corrections as can be done.
Is that hard to do, to go back when you've already put something in place and then, you know, as you say, correct it, which may not, in your mind, be a correction, but for the client is a correction. Mm-hmm. Is it hard to go back and do that?
Well, it depends on the specific circumstances. But when that happens, these are usually very minor corrections that we're making. And as I mentioned, the real key is the discussions that plastic surgeons have with their patients prior to the procedure to set expectations.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and my guest is Dr. Peter Rubin. He is the UPMC Endowed Professor and Chair of Plastic Surgery at the University of Pittsburgh Medical School. You can join our conversation with a comment or question, something that you may be interested about in regard to the field of plastic surgery, at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH@WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Many of our listeners might be surprised to learn that the University of Pittsburgh Medical School is on the nation's list of leading schools for training plastic surgeons. What makes Pitt a leader in the field, in this particular field of medicine?
Well, we've had a tradition of excellence going back over 70 years with the founding of our plastic surgery program in the early 1940s. And over time, we've had an incredible commitment to excellence in clinical care, to service to the community, and to outstanding education and to cutting-edge research. And we've really made a point over the years of training leaders in plastic surgery. In fact, there are more leaders in plastic surgery that have come from the University of Pittsburgh than from any other program in the nation. And that tradition has really continued forward. We emphasize those pillars of service and clinical care, research and education, and we attract really the best and the brightest to come and train in our programs and be part of our faculty.
What are some of the innovations that plastic surgery has led to in the medical field?
Well, more recently, over the last decade, we have developed many new reconstructive procedures in the area of reconstructive microsurgery for being able to move tissues from one part of the body to the other to correct very difficult reconstructive problems related to trauma and cancer treatment. We've developed new techniques in the area of reconstructing patients after major weight loss. And that's been something that has really been pioneered at the University of Pittsburgh, along with the growth of our weight loss surgery programs. And we have a program here called Life After Weight Loss that has really been one of the first dedicated programs in the nation. We've also, in plastic surgery, been embracing minimally invasive therapies, especially regenerative therapies that can reconstruct facial injuries and limb trauma for patients after combat injuries and after other serious injuries. And even going back in the history of plastic surgery, most people don't realize this, but the very first kidney transplant in the world was performed by a plastic surgeon.
Wow. What year was that?
That was in 1954. That was Dr. Joseph Murray. He was awarded the Nobel Prize in 1990 for his work.
Amazing. And that's something I'm guessing a lot of people wouldn't guess or wouldn't know about.
I think a lot of people would not know that.
And unlike other surgeons, people can see the immediate results of the surgeons that do plastic surgery. So do plastic surgeons keep this in mind when treating patients?
Absolutely. It's a very visual specialty. It's very three-dimensional. The results are out there for everybody to see. And everyone is in the field is very aware of that.
When plastic surgeons are maybe, you know, obviously you're meeting with patients before and after, before, during, and after an operation like this, do you get a sense of what it's like for the surgeons when they run into somebody that they have performed plastic surgery on in the street, and what it's like for them to kind of see their work coming at them, maybe?
Well, I think all plastic surgeons have had the experience of seeing their patients out in public areas outside of the hospital. And certainly surgeons are very sensitive to the fact that these are confidential issues for the patients, whether or not they choose to acknowledge and that they've had plastic surgery or disclose that. But that's definitely an experience that all plastic surgeons have had.
And what is the most difficult type of plastic surgery to do?
Well, within each subspecialty of plastic surgery, there are cases that are going to be more difficult. For example, for a hand surgeon, there are certain types of reconstructive cases that are going to be more difficult in their area of expertise. In my area of expertise, which is body contouring after weight loss, some of the more challenging cases are breast reconstructions or breast reshaping operations after severe weight loss. And in fact, we've had to innovate and develop some new techniques here in our center at UPMC and the University of Pittsburgh to help these patients. And that's really the exciting part of this field, is to be able to innovate these new techniques, develop them, refine them, and help our patients.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest, Dr. Peter Rubin, UPMC endowed professor and chair of plastic surgery at the University of Pittsburgh Medical School. Your comments and questions for him are welcome at 412-246-2002. That's the number to call to join our conversation on the air. And let's go to the phones. We have Judy from Pittsburgh on the line. Hi, Judy. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I actually have two comments. I'm currently a patient of Dr. Rubin's. And recently, this past winter, when I was in the office, you mentioned about it being one of the most well-known programs nationally, also internationally. He had some residency candidates from international programs who were looking at potentially being accepted into his program. They were also interviewing in California. And like you, at all the media and everything, I said to them, oh, I'll bet that you would be interested in the California fellowship. And they were immediately, oh, my gosh, no, this is the number one fellowship you want to get into. The skill and the type of work that, you know, Dr. Rubin does is known internationally. And really, it was their program of choice that they wished to get into. And then along with that, probably about 15 years ago, I was successfully had a major weight loss. And I actually visited Dr. Rubin at that time, cosmetically wanting to make some changes. My weight loss was not enough that my insurance covered it. So I decided to wait. But as I got older, now 15 years, I'm approaching 60. I had the financial resources to make the investment, and I did. And the reason being, some of the issues with the weight loss, the extra weight on the shoulders, the neck, the back, skin excoriation, how that can impact your ability to move and keep active. I was actually concerned that as I got older, I would generate health issues with an ability to keep moving. So I made the investment in a long-term investment in my health. And so I think that's another part of the work that Dr. Rubin does in terms of keeping patients mobile and able to stay healthy and keep that weight loss off. And I just want to make sure that I had that opportunity to share that with your listeners today.
Well, Judy, I'm sure that Dr. Rubin appreciates what you have to say, for sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, Judy, thanks very much for calling and for your comments and for really highlighting how important these procedures are for patients who have been through very successful weight loss and how this really is part of that life-changing process.
I'm curious, before we take another call, how far back Pitt's history with plastic surgery goes.
So Pitt's history really got started in the early 1940s, when Dr. Milt DePertis established the first plastic surgery residency program here. And our first resident who graduated was Dr. Jack Gaisford, who graduated in 1950, a very prominent plastic surgeon in the community. And then Dr. Ross Musgrave, who was a very famous pediatric plastic surgeon, was the second graduate. And that really started the training program and this great tradition back in the early days of Pitt plastic surgery.
Let's go to Janet in Irwin. Hi, Janet. Welcome. You have a question.
Yes, hi. I've been a nurse anesthetist for 38 years, so I've had the advantage of seeing good surgeons and some ones that are kind of pretty bad. And I don't know if I'm allowed to mention a surgeon's name.
Probably
that be appropriate?
Not. Probably not.
Okay. But at any rate, how does a layperson choose a good one? I mean, I think there are people that get bad news from, advice from bad sources. So how do you choose a good one? That would be really important.
Okay, Janet. Well, you raise a good point. I'm sure there are people that, as they think about what they need to do for, maybe it's because of a burn or some sort of problem that they've had that they need plastic surgery for or would like to have it for, or simply someone who elects to have a nose job. If you've never done it before, you may have a hard time figuring out exactly who you go to. So, Dr. Rubin, any advice that you would have for somebody like Janet?
Absolutely, Janet. You know, the first consideration is related to the qualifications of the surgeon. And a plastic surgeon has completed a residency training program in plastic surgery and then goes on to be board certified by the American Board of Plastic Surgeons. And that's a very special certification. There are other board certifications that are not the American Board of Plastic Surgery certification. So you want to look for that mark of qualification. Secondly, plastic surgeons in your community or in any community will have a reputation in their hospital and in the community and will likely be known by your primary care doc, by other doctors who take care of you, and they'll be able to provide some guidance on the qualifications and the quality of care that you would be getting from different surgeons in the area.
Janet, thank you for that phone call. Dr. Rubin, thank you for the insight, the historical lesson, and the advice that you have given people who clearly are in need of it calling in on the program today. Again, Dr. Peter Rubin is the UPMC Endowed Professor and Chair of Plastic Surgery at the University of Pittsburgh Medical School, which is a leader in the field of plastic surgery going back, as Dr. Rubin said, to the 1940s. Dr. Peter Rubin, thank you so much for being our guest on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Coming up, we will meet the new director of the Carnegie Museum of Natural History. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.